Great. Well, thank you, Shad. Again, my name's Ed Boswell, and as the name suggesting, I'm going to be talking about quantifying the effects of freeze-thaw cycles on soil detachment, part of a research group at UW-Madison, along with Nick Balster in the Soil Science Department, as well as Anita Thompson in the Biological Systems Engineering Department, again at the UW. So what I'd like to do is introduce you to a portion of the research that I'm doing at UW-Madison, and again, this portion is focusing on freeze-thaw cycles and detachment. I'll give you an introduction to the project that we're doing and some preliminary data from last winter's field experiment, and the experiment will be repeated this winter and then a third winter season as well in the future. So the focus of my research has begun to really centralize on soil aggregates and soil aggregate stability. As we know, soil aggregates are critical for soil quality and soil health. They have many benefits to the soil matrix as far as sequestration of soil organic carbon, nutrient cycling, as well as the effect of the coalescence or the joining of the primary soil particles, not only making the aggregates, but creating the negative space that they're leaving behind, and a favorable pore structure of macro and micro pores, leading to infiltration benefits as well as benefits for gas exchange and creation of niches for microbial communities. So we know that the aggregates can also be susceptible. I think I can point here. So there's potentially some fracture planes that are developed or, you know, have developed in this aggregate. And then we know that not all aggregates are potentially created equally, so that some of these material that we can see here that's aggregating may be more susceptible to detachment than others. Again, on the left side of the slide are some of the components that can contribute to aggregation and stable soil aggregates. And on the right side, we have processes that can lead to the disruption of soil aggregates. A lot of research has been performed. A lot of the literature is focusing around tillage effects from no-till to conventional till, sort of everything in between, and how that might affect aggregation and then subsequently infiltration or soil organic carbon dynamics. There seems to be little work, however, that's done on freeze-thaw cycle effects on aggregates creation and disruption. So that has become the focus of our research, particularly in field studies. And I think it's a critical time to begin these investigations as we can begin to predict changes in snow cover, so this insulating effect that snow might have in decoupling the soil and air temperature, so buffering the soil from rapid fluctuations in temperature, many freeze-thaw cycles. So with this prediction in variable snow covers or perhaps reductions in snow cover due to climate change and then subsequent changes in dynamic soil temperature, obviously this is kind of the first approach of a very basic conceptual model, and timing is everything in this procedure as far as when the snow falls, whether the soil has frozen prior to the snowfall. But I think it gives us a good idea and places some emphasis on the importance of the work. So from some of the laboratory research, we've identified maybe three of the main factors that need to be recognized when we talk about freeze-thaw effects on soil aggregation. The first being moisture content at the time of freezing, so you could have dry soil or saturated soil. Secondarily, the freezing rate that the soil is experiencing. And thirdly, the cycle number, so the number of freeze-thaw cycles that the soil goes through. I pulled out a couple references from the literature, and I've identified the points at this sliding scale that they've noted disruption in soil aggregates. Again, these are laboratory studies. So generally, we look for, if we're experiencing a high moisture content within the aggregates, in these studies, it was a rapid freezing rate, so within 24 hours. And cycle numbers in between, on the low side there, the Lurish was 6, the other study was about 9 cycle numbers. So these were the conditions in these studies that they saw disruption. So based on that laboratory literature and these three functional processes, if you will, we formulated a general hypothesis for the research that greater freeze-thaw cycles resulting from variable snow cover will increase soil aggregate disruption and erodibility. Again, this is just a general hypothesis. We formed many other detailed hypotheses in the study and alternative hypotheses, but I think this is a nice starting point to frame the project. So in creating our field study, we were lucky enough to be granted access to the Pope Farm Conservancy, which is in Middleton, just outside of Madison, so nice and close to the university. As an aside, we've been the first group that's been invited to do any kind of research out there. We formed a great relationship with the Pope Farm, the Friends of Pope Farm Conservancy, as well as the town of Middleton that manages the site, and it's led to some other classroom activities out there, as well as some other education outreach opportunities that we're doing out there. So we've been very lucky to be out there, and we enjoy the site. So the general location of my field plots is going to be in this corner of this agricultural field here. And we can see there's an interesting, in the background of the photo there, is actually a concrete spillway that was installed by the Soil Conservation Service and the Civilian Conservation Corps in 1938. The spillway, this concrete structure is pictured right here. And this was installed to curb this massive gully erosion that was occurring at the site, again, in the early 30s. So it's an interesting, it lends some history of erosion research to the site. And again, we're pleased to be continuing that research at the site many years later. So what we created were experimental plot sizes of 2 meters by 2 meters squared. We instrumented those plots at three depths, 5, 10, and 20 centimeters, with the Decagon 5TM soil moisture and temperature probes. And then we've also installed frost tubes. So this is a detail of each of those plots, and the experimental layout is to have three of those plots replicated with three treatments. So we have a no-snow treatment, we have an insulated treatment, and then we have a snow treatment. And again, these are those 2 meter plots that I detailed in the previous slide. This is what they look like installed, and this photo helps you to frame us on the landscape. This is the spillway that I talked about previously. And here are the no snow plots, insulated plots, and then the snow plots are over here. So the insulated plots, we've installed about a meter of straw on the plots prior to soil freezing. And the no-snow treatment is accomplished by using these four 2 meter by half meter PVC corrugated panels that are just installed prior to a snowfall event, and then they're removed after the snowfall event so as not to affect the overall soil energy balance due to the covering. And this is what they look like covered with a little bit of snow prior to their removal. So we found these treatments to be quite effective in regulating soil temperature over the winter. The red line here is our insulated plot, so this is the straw treatment, and we can see that it stays well above freezing here until maybe mid-November it starts to drop, and then these are average numbers. If you look at the data in a little bit more fine resolution, it does drop below freezing just here in the coldest portion of the winter. But it's been a very effective treatment in maintaining soil temperatures above freezing. The blue line is the snow treatment, so that's the natural snow. We didn't get very much last winter, so it shadows fairly closely to the no snow treatment, which is here in black. But you can see some differences at this portion in the winter. So we were happy to see that our treatment effects were effective in manipulating soil temperature. Soil moisture at 5 centimeters, again, this is using the Decagon 5TM probes. This is an interesting story that we've been discussing with the Decagon folks that have been here at the vendor booth. So we can see here in the beginning of the winter that there's this wide fluctuation in soil moisture content in these no snow and the snow treatment plots. And this is the sensor is picking up a phase change between liquid and ice within the soil. So when this is a plot of air temperature, soil temperature is following a similar trend. So as the soil and the air temperature warms, we're measuring more liquid water, and then as it freezes, the dielectric permittivity of the soil is changing, so we're actually recording a lower moisture content. But in fact, it's probably staying similar. We don't see that trend here in the insulated plots, so we're assuming that soil moisture overall between those two phases is similar in all of the treatments. And then we do see a drop here. Again, this is primarily ice that it's measuring, and then we see that change here. But I think what's interesting in this plot as well is that the disruptive effects that we're looking for with these freeze-thaw cycles in this experiment are illustrated fairly well here with this phase change of water occurring in the fall and in the spring. And again, under our hypothesis, this sort of lull or this flat period here becoming shorter and shorter, so frequent freeze-thawing on either sides of those becoming closer and closer together, potentially with climate shifts and more variable snow cover. So in assessment of aggregate stability, we used the wet aggregate stability method from Kemper and Rousseneau, so just looking at a specific size fraction, 0.250 millimeters or 250 microns, and looking at the stability of those aggregates. So we collected samples in the fall and the spring after this winter treatment. And then this figure shows that data with our treatments. So none of these numbers seem to be or are significant after this first winter period. So this is aggregate stability, no snow, fall, winter. We do see a drop, but again, not significant. In the insulated plots, they appear to stay maybe a little bit more similar. And then again, the snow plots are fairly similar to the no snow treatment in this year. So this is one method of assessing aggregate stability. I think we're going to employ some others, maybe mean weight diameter, and hopefully have that data soon. The way that I was assessing erodibility or soil detachment is by using this cohesive strength meter from Partac Limited. And it's nice because it's a portable unit, and it's great for in situ measurements of soil erodibility. There's a sensor head here, and it has two infrared sensors that are measuring changes in transparency within that head as the soil is exposed to water jets within the head at increasing jet pressures. So with those increasing jet pressures, you measure that change in transmission across those two sensors as the sediment is disrupted. And what it allows you to do is calculate a critical shear value for the soil, which is an important value incorporated into a lot of erosion modeling research. And it also allows you to correlate it to sediment concentration within that chamber. So the idea then being that a less erodible soil would have a lower critical shear value, and a more highly erodible soil would have a higher critical shear value. So these are the data from just collected in the spring after our winter treatment. Again, the data are not significant at this point, but we do see a similar trend perhaps to the aggregate stability data developing. So in our no snow treatment, insulated treatment, and snow treatment. And on the y-axis is critical shear, again, a lower value being more erodible, higher value being more resistant to erosion. So our expectations going on, and again, we're embarking on our second field season currently, and we have one more season planned for the future. So what we're expecting to see is that these disruptive effects might be cumulative over these field seasons. So the disruptive effects of freeze-thaw cycles on aggregate stability will accumulate over time, and we'll begin to see differences again in both aggregate stability and critical shear values. We're also expecting our critical shear value information to inform the Water Erosion Prediction Project, which is the WEP model of soil erosion. And overall, we'd like to just get a better understanding of the role of these overwintering processes on soil erosion. That's great. Thank you very much.
So, the question, proceed away.
Yes, sir.
So, I also had the issues with the Tetragon loggers.
Okay.
Water phase change.
Should I go back to that? This will be great.
But I noticed that was happening when your soil temperatures were quite a bit above zero, and I didn't find that happening until soil temperatures got to maybe -3°C.
Okay.
Am I reading that correctly?
This plot above is actually air temperature.
Right,
so
I was just remembering from the previous one where you showed soil temperatures. Because it seemed like that was happening during a period where...
Yes, it's starting to drop here. These values are now below zero, and then they're warming. So this is within a month we've had, it looks like, at least three of those shifts between, making the assumption that, or setting the value of soil freezing at 0°C. So we do see some fluctuations here where the soil temperature is beginning to drop and then fluctuate around here. So you didn't see it until...
At least -3.
So this would be...
When does soil freeze? I haven't been able to figure that out.
Right. Well, I think that's an interesting question. At least for freeze-thaw cycles in the literature, it can vary. Some people choose maybe... soil temperature below 0°C for a certain amount of time, maybe 6 hours or something like that, or 12 hours. So I don't know. Have you come to a conclusion yourself?
Preliminary.
Okay.
And I'm in Maryland, so we get really freeze.
Okay.
We get really cold weather.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to come and visit anytime. This is about when I... hence the beard. I see you're equipped with that, so you're ready to go. But yeah, it is. It's interesting. So they've actually been interested in this data as well. They're not sure on the. They haven't had a lot of experience with using this instrumentation over the winter. So there's maybe some opportunities to learn more about that too. Yes, sir. You know, there might be. It's not really a method that I got very far down that road, but I know there was a professor in our department, Burl Lowry, that has sort of used, I believe, he had an instrumented penetrometer. I'm not sure if he used that in frozen soil, but I know that there are some ways of determining sort of just with pushing it in yourself and seeing where that stops. So I did a little bit of that in the springtime when I was... when things were thawing, just to see, you know, that thawing dynamic, and it is fairly interesting. The other issue is we're actually on a big terminal moraine, right on the edge of the Wisconsin glaciation, right before our driftless zone. So there's quite a lot of rock in the soil, so you'd have to be fairly sure that you weren't hitting rocks, I think, but. But to answer your question, I didn't go down that road very far as penetrometers.
Near the beginning of your talk, you talked about three factors.
Yes.
That would create greater soil disruption. And I'm wondering if you could comment on your three treatments and what your three treatments did as far as those three factors.
Okay, yes, sure. Okay, that's a great great question. We decided that moisture content would be a difficult thing to control for in the field. So last year when we went into the freezing event, we had very wet soils, and I think we're going to have exactly the same thing. You know, Madison's not far from here. Yesterday we got, I think, almost 2 inches of rain in Madison, so the soils are obviously very wet, and I think Thursday and Friday we're going to start at least at night getting down below freezing. So I expect again the moisture contents to be quite high in the beginning of the freezing season. The freezing rate again is something that we can control partially from our insulation treatments. In the other treatments, we're not controlling for freezing rate, but we're measuring it through soil temperature at different depths. Again, given the certain assumptions at what freezing actually means. And then the cycle number we're also controlling. And that's one thing I failed to put on the figure was the cycle number, the freeze-thaw cycle numbers that we experienced. So in the no snow treatments where we precluded snow, we had approximately 27 freeze-thaw cycles. And under the straw, I think we had 3, maybe just right towards the end there. And then I think the snow treatment was right in between there. It was maybe in the early low 20s. But
How did just the treatments affect the freezing rate? Did the insulated treatment really, when it did freeze, drag it out?
It certainly did, yes. And it really didn't happen until really far into our coldest portion of the winter. We saw it creep down there. Yes, sir.
Since we obviously have some time for
discussion,
I might go a little bit off topic.
Okay.
Just kind of wondering about kind of a micro scale variability in freezing in soils that might have aggregates in there and how that might affect your conclusions to the aggregates freeze.
Yes, that's a great point, and that's a diagram that I've developed also, and I resisted putting it in here just for the length of the presentation. But if we have some time, it does really. It's the mechanisms behind freezing and thawing within aggregates has a lot to do with the location of the water, whether it's outside of the aggregates or inside of the aggregates. So that would touch on our first, that green arrow, so the moisture content. But then the freezing rate can affect the location of that water. So if it's frozen very slowly down here towards the tail, then it actually can have the opportunity to move towards freezing fronts or freezing lenses. Sort of a similar mechanism to frost heaving. So if water's leaving the aggregates and coming outside of the aggregates, then you're with respect to those aggregates, you're actually dropping that moisture content down here. And then if it freezes outside of the aggregates, there's the potential to actually maybe increase their stability. So on a micro scale, it's really interesting, and it's that combination of these same three factors and potentially some other factors as well. But again, that moisture content, the freezing rate affecting the movement of that water in and out of aggregates, and then the cycle number. And then you get into in this cycle number, you get into some thawing effects and some cohesion effects as well. But yeah, they're very interesting mechanisms, and it makes it exciting on one hand and then a little bit daunting on the other, but we're hoping to tease all of that out with another field season.
I have a question. First of all, I feel bad for you because the next speaker isn't here, so we're going to probably grill you for 15 more minutes.
No, that's okay. Grilling is fine. What I'd really like is some...
And then we get off to the next grill.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, now this is again off.
So we have 5 minutes until the next speaker.
Okay, great.
It seems like there's some interest in nutrient cycling due to freeze thaw.
Yes.
Does your research group target that, like phosphorus release or nitrogen?
We're not looking at neither phosphorus nor nitrogen, although there's obviously a strong component of both of those in the soil science department. Both the soil science department and BSE, but in this project, we're not looking at those primarily. There is another side to this project where we're looking at soil organic carbon dynamics in this freeze-thaw aggregation relationship. So going back to one of the previous slides, that there's been demonstrations of tillage affecting the soil organic carbon dynamics within aggregates. And in the literature, perhaps an assumption that these freeze-thaw cycles will do the same thing, although it has not been demonstrated. So within this same experiment, we're looking at some erosion detachment qualities of the soil and also that soil organic carbon dynamics within aggregates. So that's the other side of the coin that, again, for the sake of time, I didn't introduce here.
What's the texture of the soil that you're working on?
Ah, That's good. So you've hit on two things that I neglected to put into the presentation that were supposed to go in, to be honest with you. This is silt loam. So it's, I believe it's St. Charles or McHenry silt loam. So we have... Great.
I'll since we've got just a little bit more.
Okay, perfect.
So the silt loam, and maybe you can just speak out loud for a second about sand, silt, and clay, and the degree in which you might expect each one of those basic fractions of the soil to respond to the disruptive force of freeze-thaw.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's a great question, and it's one of the main reasons that I tried to select, tried to locate the plots on a similar soil texture. So we're trying to control for soil texture and potentially mineralogy as closely as we can, even though we're on a sort of a bit of an eroded hill slope, has a history of erosion, as I mentioned. So that will have profound effects, specifically clay content. So higher clay contents tend to have higher soil aggregation, tend to be a little bit more resistant to these processes. And I believe in both of these studies, they had a textural component as well. So they looked at these three factors as well as differing soil textures. Beyond that, it would obviously affect the hydrology of the soil, so it would affect potentially our moisture content at freezing. And then it would play a fairly significant role in the other gentleman's question about the sort of mechanisms of how the water's moving with different freezing rates. And then organic matter plays a huge content, too, outside of just the primary particles.
When you think of soil being disrupted by freeze-thaw, do you think of that as mostly a danger for erosion, or do you also think that it could have some benefits in terms of increasing infiltration? Increasing aeration, porosity, things like that.
Well, I think, again, sticking with the micro scale, I've been viewing it as negative, as a less favorable component. Again, the potential for detachment being greater if those aggregates have been disrupted more down to their primary particles. So not only detachment, but entrainment in the flow. And then as far as soil structure goes, I feel the same way, that disruption of those aggregates, and again, we're looking at kind of surface dynamics here, but potentially causing a surface sealing, so decreased infiltration, increased runoff, the sealing coupled with disruption of aggregates into their more easily suspended particles, even kind of being a double negative.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Boswell. Awesome.